That's why my palms are hairy.
This week on Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
We're having quite the girls' night here, aren't we?
What classy bitches we are.
Perhaps serendipitous.
Brisbane thing.
There's boobies.
You just slapped them purple.
You've got a very quick climax, if you like.
So rushed at the end.
I still enjoyed it.
And welcome to episode 101 of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure.
Wow, my name is Matt.
And my name is Darren.
This week, we are looking at
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah, I know. It's just in case you didn't know what the theme was. Yeah, episode 101.
Yeah, yeah.
A few changes in the format.
Well, we thought after 100 episodes, we should take a look at our format, see what's working, what's not. It's not that it wasn't working towards the end of it, but
keep it fresh.
Yeah, exactly. We want to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
And for the first 10 episodes, 101 onwards, we are looking at sequels to films we have already done.
Yeah, we are.
Starting with this one. I mean, which essentially was the closest to... We couldn't have done the Lost Boys sequel. Lost Boys was episode one. We could not have done Lost Boys 2 because that was early noughties, I want to say.
I think so, yeah. And also was a bag of shit, from what I remember. Number three wasn't a bag of shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't a patch on the first film, but that's our little review of Lost Boys 2 and 3. As Matt said, we're going to do 10 sequels to films we've already done. That's a little celebration to ourselves, really.
Yeah.
I mean, we've reached 101 episodes.
Yeah, do you know what? That feels like a nice milestone.
Yeah, really does. But don't panic.
No.
It's only little changes.
Little changes, lots still the same.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah, see, like, we're still going to break in a song. Like this.
Sing along like this. Good week.
Yeah, it's been okay. Yeah. I found out this week I'm getting old.
Why is that then?
Went to the opticians for the first time in 31 years.
Da-na-na-na-na.
And they told me I need glasses.
Da-na-na-na-na.
Yeah, so I will be wearing glasses for when I'm doing the show, actually. Da-na-na-na-na. Yeah, it's not the best song, is it?
No, no. And we know it's all down to your nighttime activities, anyway.
That's why my palms are hairy.
God, that takes us back to pretty much episode 3 or 4,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah, wowzers.
So, apart from that, yeah, I've had a few gigs, very nice gigs. But, yeah, I just realised as I rapidly, in fact, by the time this episode goes out, I will have celebrated my 46th birthday.
Yeah, you will. I'll drink to that.
Yeah, drink to that. Shall we say what we're drinking this evening?
It's very 80s.
We've had some beer. Now we're on. So we had Prosecco for episode 100. Mm-hmm. Now for episode 101, Lamborghini.
What classy bitches we are. Yeah, it's very nice though.
Yeah, I'm quite enjoying it. What about yourself, Matt? How was your week?
Not bad. Went to see Mr. Mudge. The back doctor.
Yeah.
He's been back to him fucked for a couple of weeks.
I love the fact our catch-ups is like, oh yeah, my eyesight's going, yeah, my back's hurting.
Is that from Lamborghini? Oi. I'll be piles. Don't get me started.
Episode 500. Yeah, well, my wheelchair's a bit squeaky.
Who said that? What? What were we saying?
I've
forgotten already. Got me back sorted out. A couple of gigs. A great gig last night up in Babbicombe, which is always nice.
Mm-hmm.
And now here I am on Sunday night drinking Lamborghini.
Talking about
an Eddie Murphy film.
Get the fuck out of here.
I cannot. He's not in it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yes. Shall we move on?
Yeah, all right then.
Okay.
So one of the changes we are making is, we used to go back to the with some facts. What we're now doing is we're looking at the music and the films that were around in the 80s, starting with the charts.
Beverly Hills Cop 2 received its LA premiere on the 19th of May 1987 and went on general release in Canada and the USA on the 20th of May 1987. And so this week we are looking at the UK top 10 for the week commencing the 17th of May 1987. It's a new entry this week at number 10 for Whitney Houston and I Wanna Dance With Somebody. It's a non-mover at number 9 for Fleetwood Mac and Big Love. Down two places to number 8 this week, it's Kim Wilde and Jr. and Another Step Closer to You. Falling out of the top 5 to number 7, it's Living in a Box with Living in a Box. And this week's highest new entry is at number 6 for Marillion and Incommunicado. Rising 13 places from last week's 18 to this week's 5, it's Johnny H. Jazz and Shattered Dreams. And it's a non-mover at number 4 for Labi Siffre and Something Inside So Strong. Down one place to number 3, it's Judy Boucher and Can't Be With You Tonight. And rising one place to number 2 this week, it's Tom Jones and A Boy From Nowhere. Which means it's a non-mover at number 1 for Starship and Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. And that was the UK Top 10 for the week commencing the 17th of May, 1987.
Excellent.
That's a pretty familiar chart,
yeah, isn't it? Yeah, it does feel familiar. However, this is similar-ish time to when we were doing our last episode, which was Secret of My Success.
Yeah.
So same year.
And obviously also Mannequin as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, all around about within a few weeks of each other.
Mannequin, though, feels like it was a long time ago that we did.
Yeah, episode 3. Yeah. Man and boy.
We're in our 20s when we started.
Yeah, when we were, 12 stone Adonises with full heads of hair.
I'm still 12 stone. With interest.
Anyway, yes. Some cracking tunes in the top 10 there. As I say, Nothing's Going to Stop Us Now from Starship.
Yeah, well, there was another. Something Inside So Strong.
What a tune.
That's
from
a great
the great Labi Siffre. Shattered Dreams, Johnny H. Shattered Dreams. Johnny H. Yeah, some things don't change. Johnny H. Jazz. The Great Marillion at number 6. I think Marillion were in the charts with Kaylee last week or the week before.
Okay.
Living in a Box from Living in a Box.
Yeah, imaginative.
Yep. Kim Wilde at number 8.
I really like Kim Wilde.
And we're going to see her again this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, was she my first year at Rewind?
She was your first.
She was my first.
When you were a Rewind virgin.
But she was really good. Like, she so energetic. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
Anna Stillwood. And number 9, Fleetwood Mac. That probably won't make it either. Fleetwood Mac at number 9 with Big Love. That's a good song. New entry, number 10, Whitney Houston. A decade-defining song, I Want to Dance With Somebody. What a fucking tune.
It really is. And it's still played a lot now in your retro bars.
I mean,
and
she herself has been very quiet of late, but just outside the top 10 then. At 14, Wet, Wet, Wet with Wishing I Was Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
15, five-star, The Slightest Touch.
Yeah, pouring a drink.
He is pouring a drink. At 17, I'm just holding up my glass, Madonna with Lattis La Bonita. Yet again, I guess another decade-defining song.
You did, and I'm sure we talked about this lot. Well, I can't be sure because we were drunk.
We don't drink, what are you talking about? Yeah.
You've literally just held out a glass for me to fill you up while you were reading out the chart.
Fill me up.
Fill you up. Why don't you?
Wowzers. 23, Born to Run, the live recording from Bruce Springsteen.
I was hoping to say Forsyth then.
Bruce Forsyth. Oh, yeah, yeah. 25 is a new entry for Johnny Logan. Oh, me now. Must have been Eurovision time. Oh, 27. One of the best songs ever of all time. Mm-hmm. Of all time, ever. Europe and Carrie.
Oh, that is great. And or as we were singing it when we went to watch Europe, Gary.
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 Get them a fucking ring.
I don't know why we were singing Gary.
I can't remember now. I remember
we were queuing up to go and see Europe and we were like, Gary.
Nothing to do with alcohol whatsoever. At 28 is a new entry for the House Martins and 5 Get Overexcited. 29, level 42, the great level 42, and to be with you again. 31, I do remember this song, but I don't think it did massive business, if you like. The Fall and There's a Ghost in My House. I'm sure that's a song in a film, but I need to look at that a bit closer. Anyway, 32, John Farnham, You're the Voice.
That's a, well, I mean, yeah, that's a brilliant song.
If we're talking about decade-defining songs, that's another fucker. 33, If You Let Me Stay, Terence Trent D'Arby. 35, Friday My Mind from Gary Moore. And at number 40, Respectable from Mel and Kim.
Excellent. Do you know when you get weird flashbacks about something? I remember there was a girl in my year at school who was obsessed with Terence Trent D'Arby.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's all I can remember. It's just the name is really familiar to me because, yeah, she was so obsessed with Terence Trent D'Arby.
We had a teacher at my school.
Who was so obsessed with Terence Trent D'Arby.
She was absolutely obsessed with Terence Trent D'Arby. And I only really remember three things about her. One, you could tell when she'd had sex the night before because she would come in with really scruffy hair.
Right. Okay.
And was quite happy. Most of the time she was miserable as fuck.
Okay.
Two, she was obsessed with Terence Trent D'Arby. And number three,
you could tell when she'd had sex with Terence Trent D'Arby. Or?
She fucking wishes. And the third one, and I know one of our listeners will remember this as well because we've talked about it a few times. She came into school one day. Bearing in mind, she was teaching a class of 14, 15. This is an all-boys school. Mm-hmm. 14, 15-year-olds for English. Writing on the blackboard in a very short dress.
Yep.
That was totally see-through.
Okay.
You could see her knickknacks. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And years later, you still remember, like 30-odd years later, you still remember this.
I will raise a glass to you, Miss...
Anyway, we should drink Lambrini more often. This is
a sexy story.
We're having quite the girls' night here, aren't we?
It's the 80s. There's boobs everywhere. She was wearing big pants, everyone. I remember. Anyway, yes, moving on. That's the chart from the 17th of May, 1987.
Okay.
And now we're going to have a look at the film charts.
We are looking at the weekend box office in the UK, and then we go across to the States of the 22nd of May in the UK. So at number five, we have Jumping Jack Flash. As the trailer says, the fate of the free world is in the hands of a woman named Whoopi. Number four, House 2, The Second Story. A comedy horror about a house that is full of terrors. I've never heard of it, and after watching the trailer, I know why. Number three, Mannequin. One of the most important films of all time, about a mannequin that comes to life and has sexy time. Number two, Personal Services, a naughty film about a brothel starring Julie Walters. Not a brothel with Julie Walters, but you know what I mean. And at number one, the iconic Oliver Stone film, Platoon. And yes, I should be ashamed, I've never seen it. Moving across the States, we start at number five with The Gate. Now, demons escape from hole in a backyard in this terrible-looking film from 1987. Number four is Ishtar. Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman play songwriters that go to Ishtar in a film that I've only just heard about today that looks absolutely bonkers. Number three, The Secret of My Success. Michael J. Fox screws his aunt and Supergirl in this amazing film, and it's also the previous episode of 80s Adventure. Number two, Ernest Goes to Camp. Before he saves Christmas, Ernest works at a camp in this presumably high-budget film. And at number one, Beverly Hills Cop 2. Axel is back to fuck things up and solve another crime. And I guess, so those are the top five films in the UK and in the States of that week.
Okay. You're lucky I didn't stab you in the eye with my pen, though. How dare you diss The Gate?
I've not seen The Gate. Yeah, it looks...
It is fucking awesome.
It looks so, like, so I thought, is this a horror? No, because it's PG-13. Mm.
It's as horror as
Gremlins, maybe,
or Monster, the Monster Club,
the Monster Squad,
yeah, not the Monster Club, yeah. That was one of my favourite films when I was growing up. Was it? Fucker.
We should absolutely do that film. Yeah, I just saw the trailer. It looked really low budget and really. I mean, a whole group, a gate to hell or something opens in the backyard. Yeah, it looked really weird.
But it's lots of stop motion little creatures.
Yes. And I like a creature that goes into smaller creatures.
Shatters.
We keep personal services has come up again on the list, which we'd never heard of. Mannequin, one of our top episodes, I think.
Bizarrely, episode 3.
House 2, it's like in the States, they had the gate over here, we had House 2. So that's a bit...
Have you never seen House?
No.
Okay. It's literally a haunted house.
Okay.
And there's loads of them, from what I remember, maybe 5 or 6.
But comedy horror as well.
Sort of. I'm,
this looked rather fun.
I remember the first one more than I remember any of the subsequent ones. And I don't think the first one was particularly comedic. But it's a long time since I've seen it, so I might be wrong.
Okay. I think what we will see, and we have seen over the last 100 episodes, is the disparity between films we released in the States and over here.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't think Beverly Hills Cop was too far off them. Oh, no, it was. It was about 4 or 5 months, wasn't it?
16th of October.
There we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the very two differing charts from the UK and America.
Nice.
Well, it's that time, Darren.
This seems very challenge heavy now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but fuck it, let's go with it.
It's that time, and I really like this. This is one of my favourite features that we do. Mm-hmm. Every single week, Darren has a challenge to link the last film that we did to this film in a certain amount of steps. He starts with 5, goes down to 4, 3, 2, 1, etc. And perhaps coincidentally, Darren has one step to get from the last film we did, which was
The Secret of My Success,
to this film, which is
Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Can it be done?
Let's find out. Okay, as Matt said, I've got one step to get from Secret of My Success to Beverly Hills Cop 2. And as we know, Mercedes Rule was one of the stars of Secret of My Success. She played Sheila. And so that's where we're going to start this week. Mercedes Rule was in Married to the Mob with Dean Stockwell, who plays Chip in Beverly Hills Cop 2. And that's the one-step challenge.
I'll drink to that.
I'll drink to that too, then. Oh, like this. Oh, I like this bit.
As soon as you said Mercedes Rule, I was like, oh, that's I'm sure that's Sheila.
Yeah, the great Sheila, who you know, makes her presence really, really felt. In 4 lines, one scene?
Yep, she's got very, very little to do. If you have not seen the film in a while, our last episode was Secret of My Success. Yeah. So give it a listen.
Please do. So that's the one-step challenge. And now, basically, what we always do at this point in the podcast is give our initial reaction. And that's not going to change, but... Because we've noted that we can sometimes waffle on a little bit.
Yep.
We've given ourselves a challenge, if you like, to give our initial reaction in 5 words only. So being an odd-numbered episode, Matt, you get to go first.
Okay. My 5 words are...
Yes.
Fun. Convoluted. Exciting. And then I'm going to combine the last 2 words... Diminishing returns.
Okay.
So that's 5 words. Those are the 5 words I've given.
Right. Well, my initial reaction in 5 words is action, friendship, confused, lacking, and bigger.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's weird what you can glean from 5 words. Mm. I think we are very similar on this.
I did have, bizarrely, a little internal battle for about 30 seconds about whether to use diminishing returns.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, again, even in 5 words, it looks like we're going to be pretty much singing from the same hymn sheet.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to talk to you. I, I cannot wait to talk to you about this.
Put your teeth in, for fuck's sake.
Put my teeth in, put my glasses on.
Eh? Who said that? Turn it on, love. Turn it on. Let's have a break.
And we're back. Part two of Darren and Matt's 80s adventure, redone. We're looking at Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yes, we are. And at this point in the podcast, Matt has got his little challenge. His little challenge is his challenge to give us
the synopsis. It's average.
That's what we've heard. Matt has got his challenge to give us the synopsis of the film, and he gets as many seconds as the film has minutes. So, Matt, how long was the film?
Well, here's the thing. It's about, they say it's 142, but on IMDb, which I have been taking it for the last 100 episodes, it says 140, so I've chosen to take 140.
Finished?
Yep.
Okay, so basically, 1 minute 40 seconds to give us the synopsis. Are you ready?
Yep.
Then let's have the jingle. And if you're still ready, go.
Captain Bogomil is trying to stop the Alphabetti Spaghetti crimes, and in the process is shot. The police department in Beverly Hills has changed, and Rosewood and Taggart, like Bogomil, are led by a dick that is only concerned with public image and not police work. After the shooting, they contact Axel, who drops the case he's working on and heads straight for Beverly Hills. He steals a house and makes contact with the old gang, who go quickly about solving the case. They track the villain Dent to a gun club, and Dent tries to get Axel and co. out of the picture as they leave a titty bar, which is the closest this film gets to sexy time. They get a fingerprint, and in a series of fortunate events seem to find out that Dent is robbing his own businesses for insurance. We have lots of car chases and a gunfight, which eventually leads us to a race course in which Al from Quantum Leap is framed as the head of the Alphabetti Spaghetti crimes. Foley and co. don't buy it, and because of Mud, yes, Mud, end up at the hideout where the baddies are. Rosewood goes all Tackleberry with guns and a rocket launcher, and the three foil the crime. So, in summary, after 3 days, Bogomil is fine, the subplot of Taggart's wife is resolved, the dick that was in charge of the police gets fired, and Axel is lauded as a hero. We leave our characters as the two upstanding police officers let the other police officer go after breaking and entering, followed by trespassing. See? Nothing was impossible in the 80s.
Nice. Just remind us, how long was the film?
It was 140.
So you have 1 minute 40 seconds to give us the synopsis. You did it in, drum roll, 1 minute 26.48 seconds.
Okie dokie.
So you were under, so I shall have a little sweet.
little slurp of the Lambrini.
This beautiful wine you are plying me with.
It's a good year, 2024.
Mm, nom, 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 nom. It's Trez tasty.
Good.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, nicely done. Yeah, I did wonder about the sexy time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of booby time.
There is boobies, yeah, but like no sexy time.
And a little bit weirdly of, if you didn't have a gun, I'd bang your daughter, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yes. kind of gets me thinking as well, though. Like, Foley never really gets involved in these films, does he? I mean, that's kind of a nice thing. It's not like a James Bond thing where he's got a different girl every film.
Yeah.
He was mates with the girl in the last film.
Yes.
And he's just kind of a lone wolf.
Yeah. I'd never thought about it in that way. But yeah, there's no sexy time for Axel. Directed by Tony Scott, Wiggly's brother.
Yep.
Brought in after the director of the original film, directed by Martin Brest.
Martin Brest, yes.
Yeah.
How can we forget Brest?
Yes. So. Apparently, Bruckheimer and Simpson were very impressed with the work that Tony Scott had done for them on Top Gun.
Which is, do you know what, really understandable, because Tony Scott is, I mean, for me, arguably better than Ridley.
Right.
I mean, because, you know, I'm not a big fan of Ridley.
You're not, are you? Yeah.
But Top Gun, fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to argue with that.
He's done very well on this as well.
Yeah. But you can definitely see his influence on the film as well. This is almost action-packed. I think it leaves us out a bit of the comedy, though, for me. The bit that I loved about the first film. I wouldn't say the innocence, because it's not an innocent film. I loved the comedy element of it. And and this feels a bit more... It feels a bit more like the Eddie Murphy show.
See, that some reviews from the time called it that.
Right.
And I guess there is an element. I think what they maybe did was take a look at what was working in the first film, which is when, you know, Eddie Murphy as Axel Foley went off and riffed and became these different characters.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And then maybe doubled down on it.
Yeah.
And kind of went, oh, don't worry about the story. Just let Eddie do his thing.
Yeah. And I think it does suffer a little for that. I mean, the return was very good. A budget of $27 million. Mm-hmm. 8 million of that was for Murphy himself, allegedly. But it returned around about, there are lots of different figures toted by lots of different sites, but it returned around about $300 million. It was a nice little return.
Did okay.
Yeah.
$27 million budget.
Yeah.
And so some of the facts that I've got here, it grossed $26 million domestically in its opening
first weekend. So it pretty much recouped everything it needed to.
It was the biggest opening weekend in history. I mean, obviously you've got, you know, the theaters take their cut of that and there's marketing budget and stuff, but still,
or even the cinemas.
That's a hell of a return.
Yeah, I mean, you can't call it anything other than a success with figures like that.
It was the biggest opening weekend in history, breaking the record set by the Temple of Doom.
Right. And how long did it stand for, did it say?
I don't know. I mean, now 26 million. Do you know what? 26 million for a 24 film or something like that, one of the horrors. 26 million now would be respectable.
But, I mean, in terms of percentages, to claw back in its opening weekend, pretty much 100% of his budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
That's, I mean, it's not far off the money that the original film took 3 years earlier. I think it was about 312 million, 315 million, something like that. So yeah. It was eagerly anticipated.
I mean, there's some charming bits in this.
Yes.
Some charming bits. I like some of the callbacks to the first film.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the fact that the three of them had four of them had stayed in touch.
Yep.
And obviously gone fishing together. Yeah. And
spent holidays and things together, by the looks of it, by hints and photographs and things.
And the fact that they were so anti-Foley in the first film, but then just they fell in love with his charm. And the fact that Foley is straight there. As soon as Bogomil is shot, he's straight to Beverly Hills.
Although I do take issue with one of the lines in the script. I came as soon as I heard. But you didn't. You phoned as soon as you heard. And then you did a bit more business, and then you went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, okay. That's not here nor there. I agree. I love the relationship and the fact that they're all very close now. I mean, if I was Axel, I would have just fucking stayed in Beverly Hills, to be fair.
Yeah, there is that. But then you wouldn't have had characters like Inspector Todd and Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I love the fact that it goes back, and as he's undercover in his suit, because it's been a long time since I've seen this. So when I saw him getting suited a bit, it was like, oh, has he gone all kind of corporate, you know, but no, he was undercover. And then when he bumped into the guy from the first
film. Oh, it's just fucking brilliant. Absolutely. I mean, that is one of I'm not onto highs and lows yet, but for me, that was when watching it. Yes, I've forgotten about this. That's a real highlight for me.
It's great. And the way he riffs.
Mm.
You can see Axel Foley is always two or three steps ahead of everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And well, Eddie Murphy, I think, is probably two or three steps ahead of every other actor on the screen.
Yeah.
Thinking of ways that he can maybe try and set them up, maybe try and make them laugh.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he's a very, very funny guy.
Yeah.
And these films do prove that. But as I said before, it does feel a bit too much like a vehicle for Eddie Murphy when he doesn't need it.
I don't know. I'm not sure I felt entirely that.
Right.
Because when he did do his shtick, if you like, when he did his different characters, and I love the fact that he was always taking money from people but giving it away again straight afterwards. Yes. I thought that was great. I mean, I really enjoyed that. And I think maybe if you pushed it further, which I'm not sure it does in the third film. I can't remember the third film.
I remember absolutely fucking hating the third film.
But I think this still struck a nice balance. I'm already, before we even get into the final scores, though, I want to say I did not enjoy this as much as the first film.
Nope, me neither.
But I still enjoyed it.
Yeah.
There was points I was smiling away on this. So.
There's some great, great moments. I feel some of the character stuff is a bit forced, I think.
Okay.
The whole thing with the...
I guess like they kind of went, okay, this is what's working.
It worked well last time, let's do it again.
Okay.
I think it loses some of the... Maybe it is a bit of the innocence of the... You know, when he goes into the Beverly Palm Hotel in the first film and says about, I've got a room, and he doesn't get the room and he kicks off.
Reporter, yeah.
Yeah. Getting his way into the... some sort of members club to see the villain.
Oh, the gun club at the beginning?
No. In the first film.
Oh, right. Sorry.
When he pretends to be the camp guy with a disease that he needs to let... But in this way, he's sort of... It's the same sort of club when he goes into the gun club. And I just think the one in the first film was funnier than the one in this film. Only just.
I suppose also in this film, he didn't actually need to go to reception at all. There was loads of people milling about. He could have just walked in.
I just think in the first film that maybe the comedy has a bit of a lighter touch. I mean, it's not subtle because there's nothing subtle about Eddie Murphy's performance at all. And that's why we absolutely fucking adore him. But I'm not taking anything away from it. It's still very, very good.
It's great. His interaction with Gilbert Godfrey as well.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I loved that man. I just think it was... So apparently some of that scene was really improvised when they're talking about, oh, that's my wife's car and all that sort of stuff. I found it charming because I love Gilbert Godfrey. You know, he's got the most annoying voice ever, but just such a recognizable actor, you know? So it's... And I'm guessing that was to replace Serge.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that was the scene that probably they would have... Because I'm gutted... Sorry, I'm going off on one now. I'm gutted that we got into this. And I was convinced, if you'd have said to me, is Serge in all three films? Mm-hmm. I'd have said, yeah. Yeah.
Four?
Well, yes. Yeah, we do have a fourth coming. But yeah.
I mean, I have to be honest, that was almost one of my lowlights.
Oh, really?
I hated it. I thought the stereotypes that they were playing on in that scene... It really pissed me off. I didn't find it particularly funny.
Okay.
And I just thought it was almost too silly. You know, picking up the phone, go, bitch, and slamming the phone down. It's almost pantomime.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I forgive a lot of sins because it's Gilbert Godfrey.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was brilliant.
Yeah, I just found that a bit too far, I think.
I think that was... As a replacement, for something with Serge. Yeah. They were trying to find...
Who is back for the third film and the fourth film, as we've seen in the trailer, which should be out not long after this episode, to be fair.
No. Probably about a month away.
Yeah, so keep an eye on Netflix if you're a fan.
Which is weird. Is it not?
The fact that they're going back to do a fourth?
Or? No, I mean, the fact that it's coming out on Netflix, although it's a Paramount film, and Paramount have got their own streaming service. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Is that different in the States to here?
No, Paramount Plus is a Netflix thing in the States, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. But as in...
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Right. Okay. We do get to see a little bit of Ronnie Cox as Bogomil, but apparently was supposed to be, as scripted, was in the film a lot more originally, but because of RoboCop, couldn't commit to the whole shoot. So...
I didn't know he was RoboCop.
Well, no, did I? But yeah, so unfortunately, he's not in it as much. But we get Rosewood and Taggart
and his daughter,
and Jan for a couple of minutes. Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that Billy has changed. I'm not convinced that he should have changed that much. He's become this sort of weapons obsessed. Mm-hmm. Rambo obsessed. I mean, I get why there's Stallone posters all over his apartment.
Yeah.
Because Bridget Nielsen in the film, but... and she was with him at the time, although allegedly had an affair with somebody else, but we won't talk about that.
But also, it's a weird sort of circular thing, isn't it? So because Stallone was originally in the running for Axel Foley.
Mm.
So it's kind of a weird sort of... Yeah.
I just don't buy the fact that that Billy would have changed that much. He's almost a completely different character to how he was in the first film.
I don't know. Maybe it's some. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's something like they thought, well, what can we do with Billy?
Mm.
You know, what can we do with Taggart? I don't know. Let's give him a problem with his wife, which is wrapped up in
3 days.
Like, but also, he was pretty busy. He was pretty busy with Foley and Rosewood during that entire. When the fuck did he find time to reconcile?
Well, to be fair, it sounds like it's quite a common occurrence. Her moving out and then who moving back. And the fact that, you know, her mum didn't have cable, she moves back again.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it probably were. I mean, it's kind of fun to see little innocent Billy.
He was a bit gormless in the first film, wasn't he? And that seems to have gone a little bit.
He was. I can't remember him from the third. He looks very different now, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, but we won't get into that because that might be quite offensive. Plastic fantastic. going to the supporting cast then. I love the opening sequence, the pre-title sequence, with Bridget Nielsen attacking the and her gang.
Yep.
Attacking the jewelers.
The Alphabetti Spaghetti Gang.
The Alphabetti Spaghetti Gang. I think that works really well. I mean, it really ramps up the action from the off.
Do you know what I was expecting, though?
Mm.
They finished that, and then you hear that, like, the music swell. I was like, are they going to go into The Heat Is On again? I think they should have done that.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, the music is pretty similar to what we had
It is. But I don't know. It would have tied in nicely if that had become synonymous. I mean, it is synonymous with it anyway, but
Harold Faltermeyer's back.
Yep. Because they didn't want to. They wanted Hans Zimmer.
Tony Scott suggested Hans Zimmer, but he was a bit unknown.
Bit of an unknown, yeah.
At that point, yeah. Wanted to go somewhere unknown. I mean, I'm not going to argue with Harold Faltermeyer. The man's a genius. And I like the fact that he's taken the cues from the first film and the sort of almost a variation on them and moved them on a bit. But then we also get songs from, you know, bands and artists that had songs in the first film. So just different songs. You get the Pointer Sisters there again, and Giorgio Moroder is there.
And they get referenced.
Yeah, they do, yeah. George Michael gets to have I Want Your Sex in there. Yeah, great.
I smiled at the soundtrack, though. It was a good soundtrack again.
Yeah. But, I mean, Harold Faltermeyer, you're in reliable hands there, aren't you?
But also, I don't think they overused it, because that's the danger, because I think, you know, the Axel F theme, if you like, was so popular.
And still is, really. I mean, I don't know how long ago Crazy Frog was, but even, you know, 20-odd years after the film.
Mm.
My issue with it now is probably your issue as well.
Yeah, when people go ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, someone will go ding, ding, and, you know, you just slap them purple.
Slap them purple.
Slap them until they learn.
But there was the danger of them overusing it in the second film. I don't think, as you say, it moved on. And when the theme did appear, you kind of go, yeah, that's gone.
It's also the doom, 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 doom.
Oh, so it's even just doing that makes me kind of go, oh. So,
yeah.
So I guess a fear for the new film, if you like, is that they just try and play the greatest hits.
It is in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the trailer, as I've said to you already, it looks a bit too serious for my liking, but hopefully, and it looks like Eddie Murphy's balls have dropped, because his voice looks like an octave, or sounds like it's an octave deeper than it is normally.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah, I cannot.
So the pre-title sequence I really liked. I love Foley doing his credit card thing. In the bar. Is it the same bar as the first film?
I don't know.
I couldn't figure it out. It sort of has that vibe, but I'm not convinced. So, but, I mean, the treatment of a poor girl. This bitch can suck a snooker ball or whatever it is through a 20-foot hose pipe. The titty girl. It's very funny. But, I mean, you'd never get away with that nowadays.
No. It's nice that they still kept touch with Detroit, you know? Because I love Paul Reiser.
Yep.
I think he's great. And just to have him and Marcy, was it?
Yes. Yeah. Although then there's two of them in the car.
And when he tries to play Inspector Todd.
Yes.
And stuff like that. It's just, he's really
fun. I love
fun.
Inspector Todd.
Yeah, Inspector Todd's great.
Mm. Another one of those characters or guys like, what's his face from Full Metal Jacket, who wasn't an actor, was actually brought in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wasn't an actor. He was like the drill sergeant. But he's great. You stereotypical, cliche, angry inspector. But he does care for him. He does give him a break. Whereas Lutz is just a complete fucking dick.
Lutz the Butz, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, though, sorry to say, the film felt very overstuffed with stuff that did not be didn't need to be there. Mm-hmm. It needed trimming and rewriting, and it would have been a lot cleaner.
And for an hour 40, there's a lot of characters in there.
That don't need to be there.
Don't need to be there. I mean, the whole credit card thing doesn't really get resolved.
The whole Lutz thing really didn't need to be there.
That was daft. And the whole thing with Jeffrey. Yes, he's in the film, so you've got to use him, I suppose. But
Also, did you know, I mean, I think it was second viewing, I saw that the stuff at the gun club goes on for a really long time.
Yeah.
It's a good 15, 20 minutes of the film.
But, I mean, when you look at the first film, you've got a few scenes, or more than a few scenes, with Foley and Burkhoff acting together. In this, I think
he meets him at all, does he?
He's got a couple of lines, maybe a couple of lines
at the end.
At fucking Hefner's house.
And a couple of
lines at the end. There's no major scene. He has more time, I think, with Bridget Nielsen. So I think the script is a little bit wonky. It needs a bit of trimming here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And Thermopolis, the other guy, he doesn't say a fucking single word, but he's the big villain, if you like, after Dent. It's ridiculous. And that, for me, is where the script really falls down. It spends too much time almost pissing about.
Yeah, weak villains and things. But, I mean, that almost takes me into highs and lows. So.
Well, let's do it.
Well, before we go, there's just a quick honorable mention. I was like, oh, okay then. So we've got Chris Rock here. I was like, I'm guessing this was very early in his career. Again, it's another example of Eddie Murphy handing on the money that he was given or whatever. Yeah. That's the nice thing about Axel. He doesn't keep his money.
Mm.
All right then. All right. Okay, I can see you're really happy to talk about Chris Rock. Okay.
I just wish he'd fucking slapped him a bit harder.
Let's go into highs and lows.
Being an odd-numbered episode, you get to go first, my friend.
Okay. Look, much like you said last week, I'm going to have to cop out a little bit, I'm afraid. One of my first highs is Eddie. It has to be.
Mm-hmm.
Without Eddie, there is no film. And he just makes this work. Because actually, we've said some pretty honestly brutal things about this film. And I think he's the person that does elevate it. And yes, it may become the Eddie Murphy show, but it just makes this work. Like, more than it would have done. Because the first film had a lot of good people surrounding him, a lot of great set pieces. This had less so. Anyway, we'll get into that in the low lights, but it's his charm. He makes this whole thing work. So, his Johnny Wishbone, the explosive round stuff. I know you weren't a big fan of that, but it's him doing his shtick, if you like, that holds this film together. He's the kind of glue in this kind of charming mess.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first highlight.
Okie dokie. And my first highlight sort of ties into that. It's the relationship between the three main cops in this film. It is that friendship that they've struck up from, as a result of the action of the first film. The fishing trips they've been on, they're really close. They work really well together. It's almost like a comedy duo that becomes a comedy trio.
Mm-hmm.
And Axel obviously is leading the way all the time. But, when Taggart slips and falls in the pool, or they go back to Rosewood's house and they have a look at the tortoise, not a fucking turtle. Or Axel sees the guns on them, or they go to the club. And
Billy, we ought to talk.
The whole Gerald Ford thing. It's that really lifts the film. They do have that little bit of him and Taggart do butt heads. When he says, where's your loyalty? And we get a bit more backstory.
Yeah,
so when we fucking join the force together.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
So yeah, I think that for me is a real highlight, as it was in the first film.
And hopefully it will be in the fourth.
And it will be in the fourth, yeah. And just that, not a daft device, but that thing of, you weren't always a cop, which gets repeated over and over and over.
Yeah, the breaking in.
It's great. Their relationship, again, is a real highlight for me.
Even if they do enable him to steal a house and let him get away with it.
How can you steal a house?
Good point.
Yeah.
My second highlight, it's actually similar to a few weeks ago. I really like the action.
Right.
It's the car chases and the shooting. And,
right.
And it felt so 80s, but great. You know, when everything was practical,
mm-hmm.
and your cop cars getting smashed up, yep. and you know, they go around in a fucking cement mixer. It's great, you know. Who's going to authorize? You know, it's all the action for me is what really works about this film. Yeah, it doesn't have the charm of the, you know, the first film where you got this big shootout of this mansion. And
the banana in the tailpipe.
Yeah, banana in the tailpipe, yes. And you've got a very quick climax, if you like. But you
get used to that when you turn 50.
But you still have stuff like Rosewood pressing the button and things blowing up. And it's you know, jumping up onto a chain as a car's coming towards you and you shoot someone in the face. It's the action is really good in this. So as an action comedy, it does deliver.
Mm-hmm.
Second highlight, the action.
Okay then. Well, my second highlight is the action.
Oh, is it?
Bizarrely. There's a lot of them, and they are typical Tony Scott sequences. I loved the concrete truck and the car chase. Again, trashing a load of cop cars as a callback to the first film.
And Blues Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. The car stuff outside the club. Although, bizarrely, when it cuts to the shot of the car on its side and the pylon over and the water squirting up in the air, I mean, they like fucking trashing a lot of fire hydrants in this, don't they? It was a bizarre sort of tracking shot from left to right. And that just almost took me out of the film. Bizarre. Anyway, yes.
But we are really lucky, though, in that car accident.
Yeah.
That the book of matches fell out
because
if not, the film would have stopped.
Exactly. The book of matches fell out. It didn't get soaking wet and the guys got away in about 2.5 seconds. Yeah. But anyway, and it's a really big, ambitious end. Some of it not all successful. I mean, the stuff with Billy and the rocket launcher is a little bit daft. Luckily, pulling the trigger at the right time, blown.
But it's Billy trying to be Rambo. Exactly.
But again, it's that 80s manly men doing.
And he's wearing a cool
action.
Duster. He's wearing a duster. Well, he's always wanted to wear this, Darren.
Duster, fucking hell. It's a flasher Mac. but yeah, so yeah, my second highlight as well is the action. I think it's very, very good.
No low lights for me. It's a perfect film.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, my first low light is, I'm going to say, I don't think the story was up to much, really. Mm-hmm. I think it was full of plot holes.
Yep.
And there was a lot of convenience there just to advance the story. And I think it wrapped too quickly all of a sudden. Because when I was watching it, I think I paused it and I looked and I went, oh, it's got about 8 minutes left. And they are just entering the compound or something. So, yeah, it just felt like it wrapped too quickly and too conveniently as well. Well, no, hang on. You three have saved the day. Well, you guys are going to be fired. No, you're fired. And you three will be heralded as heroes. And then everything just is tied up in a neat little bow within about 2 or 3 minutes. So that's what I think was a low light for me. Story wasn't up too much and it wrapped too quickly.
Okay. My first low light. It's along the same sort of lines, but a bit more specific. I found it confusing in places.
Mm-hmm.
What was Bogomil onto and how was he onto it?
Well, we don't know that.
Well, exactly.
But he had mud in his shoes.
But exactly. What is oil field mud different to every other type of mud in
Because that's
LA?
Where they have their horses that run around and therefore then need to take a bath at the actual race course.
Well, that's cleared that up.
Yeah, there we go.
What did he find out about the club?
That there's boobies.
When Chip takes out, at the gun club, Chip takes out the thing, the package of stuff to the goons in the car, and when he gives them the matches, why didn't the cops see that happening? Where was the action?
Because it was a different camera angle.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, well, that's cleared that up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why was Hugh Hefner there? And why was there a party at his mansion that they just got into?
Because I guess he wanted money.
Yep. why does the mayor change his mind very quickly and fire Lutz and keep the other three on?
Oh, yeah, because they needed to wrap the film up in 2 minutes.
Yeah, okay, well, that's cleared that up. And finally, why the hell was Dent's death so rushed?
Oh, because the guy had another film to get onto.
Right, okay.
Right, well, okay, then, so there we
okay,
go.
Okay, then I'll withdraw all of those completely, 100%.
It's true, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I agree with every single one of those points.
It was so rushed at the end. Mm-hmm. There was no real jeopardy.
It's not at the end of Lethal Weapon where, like, Mel Gibson's fighting a guy in the rain or something like that.
But I think this is also, as well, is the only one of the three, or the, I've not seen four, obviously, the only one of the three originals, where Eddie Murphy doesn't end up with a bullet in his arm or his leg or his ass or something. It just seemed to happen really quick, to the point where I had to go back and watch the bit with Dent in the car.
I did that.
Being shot in the head.
Was that
Dent?
I had to rewind, yes.
Oh, is that it?
And then she steps in and
Tagger
shoots her or something.
With the most violent gun in the world, which throws her 6 feet in the air.
Yeah, well, not 6 feet in the air, but she's very tall.
Or 12 feet in the air. Yeah, no, I just found it a little bit confusing. So that's my first low light. Okay. Yes.
My second one kind of feeds on from that. So it's the villains.
Right.
I could not remember them before I went to watch this. And then, do you know what? I've got a feeling next week I won't be able to remember them again. It was just such a weird structure. You've got like the boss guy, then you've got the fool guy, then you've got, you know, the very notes. Oh, yeah, they say 6 foot blondes grow on trees in Beverly Hills. Fucking bullshit.
Not like Bridget Nielsen.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. You've got her going into a robber bank and then she can't be identified? Fuck off. It was just...
Yeah, there's no covering her up whatsoever. No. Apart from some fake auburn wig or whatever, wig or whatever it is.
She wore a wig at least when she had Bogdanov.
But you could spot Bridget Nielsen from a mile away. And there was CCTV back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as Big Brother as it is now, but there was some CCTV. You could pick her out. Yeah.
But back to what you were saying about the confusing stuff. So you've got like all these different moving parts in a film that is actually an hour and 40. And you kind of go, well, do you think, I don't know, maybe let's dial this back a bit and maybe have a guy and his henchman or henchwoman.
Like we had in the first film. And you know, the henchman in the first film was a fucking horrible bastard.
Yeah, Jonathan Banks. Yeah.
You're terrified. I mean, to be fair, she, you know, it takes on the role in this film and she's very, very good.
But if it was just him and her.
They just don't get enough time together.
But if it was just those
two.
And they were almost like this Bonnie and Clyde type couple. But you didn't need Dean Stockwell. You didn't need the other people and all this sort of stuff. No. You could have made it a...
And such a convoluted plan.
But this also gave me vibes of... what did we do a couple of weeks ago? The James Bond film.
View to a Kill.
View to a Kill. With the kind of relationship with like the boss, if you like.
Yeah.
And the very athletic...
And Grace Jones.
Yeah, Grace Jones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, the villains were really weak.
Okay. Well, my second low light, and I talked about it earlier, it just lost the fun a bit for me. The funny bits seemed a bit forced. It's a very, very... And I know as a sequel, it's very, very difficult. You can't just do the same thing over again because people just say, oh, they're just doing the same thing over again. But it just felt a bit too serious, a bit too try hard.
I like that.
It just didn't feel as up. And I'm not sure it's the innocence, because the first one isn't innocent, but it just took things a bit too far. You know, the whole thing with Hugh Hefner popping up and also they suddenly say, oh, this guy Russ Fielding, he's the gun expert,
yeah,
and it just happens to be that's the guy they're looking for.
I made them.
That's very convenient that that's happened. And it tries to be fun at the gun club, but as you said, it goes on too long. And it actually isn't that funny. I don't want to sound like I'm shitting on the film, because I'm not. I just wanted it to be a bit more light with its touch, a bit more fun as it is in the first film. And it just felt a bit too serious.
Okay.
But I think it's a difficult mix to get right, isn't it?
It is
a sequel.
Yeah. And they are pushing Eddie further in this film. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't find Chris Rock funny at all. He can fuck off completely.
Well, he's in it for like 2 seconds, yeah, but I mean...
2 seconds too long.
You've also got Taggart and Rosewood that spend most of the time just sat around.
Mm.
They don't really do a lot.
No, they don't. So that's my second look. Okay. So yeah, that's it. That's our look at the film.
Before we take a break, we are going to have one little thing we want to introduce to this, which is Darren is now going to try and find a weird review for this film.
So yeah, trawling the internet for reviews of this film, either from professionals, if you like, or just people leaving reviews on the net, we thought we'd pick out one that just made us... Matt hasn't heard this.
I'm looking forward to
this. So basically, I've picked out what I can think is the weirdest review or the strangest review or the... Well, make of it what you will. A little disclaimer, we didn't write this. These reviews are freely available on the internet. This review itself this week is on a very, very, very big famous site. So they've published it. I'm just reading it out. But this week's fucked up review of the film, I'm just going to give you the title of the review before I read the review.
Yeah.
So the title is A Heaping Pile.
Okay.
This was given 1 star out of 10. And the review itself reads... Unless you like Eddie Murphy when he was not funny anymore and just made movies for a paycheck, this movie is a heaping pile of crap. The smell just oozes out of the screen, cow manure, and Nigerian people. Dot, dot, dot.
What?
I have no idea what the fuck that means.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, cow manure... And Nigerian people. What the... Okay, yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah, so that's this week's crazy review.
I genuinely hope our reviews are a lot more coherent than that. You know?
Let's take a break.
Before we go to part three, we're going to leave you with a message from our unofficial sponsor from the 80s. It's not a real sponsor. So our advert from the 80s this week.
Oh, hello, Access. Am I glad to see you?
Oh, what's up, honey?
Well, look at this list. Children's clothes, vegetables for the freezer, armchair needs new covers, standard lamps on the blink. I just can't cope all at once.
Look, don't worry. Leave it to me. I'll take care of the bills.
Oh, thanks, Access. You're a real friend.
Well, what are friends for? You just relax and watch telly.
What's on?
The money programme.
Oh, nice.
Access, your flexible friend.
And we're back! Part three of Darren and Matt's 80s Adventure, where we are looking at Beverly Hills Cop... I was going to say three then, but Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Absolutely not three.
Two.
Definitely two. And at this point in the podcast, it's time for the quiz.
The new quiz.
Eyes down for a full house.
Yes, so we're slightly shaking up the quiz, slightly. So the way it's going to work now is we get 3 questions each, and that's it. Our 3 questions are already written. We don't get a chance to choose if we've already talked about things. Tough.
That's it, yeah.
That's the way it's going to go. We're going to start with question one, which is an easy question, and that's worth 1 point. Question two will be a medium question worth 2 points. And question three will be a harder question worth 3 points. And if at the end of that, it's a tie, then we go into tiebreak questions. So, Mr. Matthew, it's an odd-numbered episode. You get to go first.
All right then, Darren, for 1 point, your easy question. What number is on Axel Foley's jacket? I mean, I'm just getting a gauge here. That's a relatively easy question, surely.
Yeah, and I think it's 67.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
And you are correct for 1 point. Nice. Then the answer is 67.
Okay. Your easy 1 point question. What is the name of Axel's psychic character?
It is Johnny Wishbone.
Johnny Wishbone. For uno punto.
All right. Your medium question for 2 points, Darren. When Axel goes into the gun club, he plays a guy, a delivery guy. So what are his daughters called?
Oh, yes. Monique and Unique.
Yes. That is 2 points to you.
Right. Okay. Your two-pointer. What incorrect name does Lutz call Billy?
Roseweed.
Roseweed. 2 points to you. So after two questions, it's 3 points each.
Okay. Your hard question.
Yeah.
For 3 points.
Okay.
Whereabouts is Axel staying? What is the address?
Oh, I meant to make a note of this. It's something like 607 Palm Drive. I can't remember.
1603 Hillcrest.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, I get where you were going with that. Yeah.
So do you get the 3 points?
No.
Just that's it.
That's okay. It.
Right. Okay. So your hard question for 3 points.
Fuck. Okay.
What was Chip Kane's date of birth?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay. It's 24th of December, 1936.
Right, okay.
It's on the printout after the after he gets the fingerprint off the matches.
Okay, great.
Right, okay, so after 3 points, after three questions,
yep,
it's
three points
each. So we go to tiebreakers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is the name of the city bar?
385 North.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Your first tiebreak question. The music they hum when they're in Rosewood's apartment, I guess,
yeah,
is from which TV show?
I know the piece of music. It's the Spanish Flea.
It is.
And we've sang that before. I think it's... I want to say the dating show. And I'm going to say dating show because that's all I've got.
Okay. I'm going to give you that. It's the dating game.
Oh, but yeah, thank you. Thank
that's
you.
Okay. So, yeah, 1 point for you there. Tiebreak number two.
Okay. how many fish does Axel have?
Yeah, I think it's two because it looks like one is a reflection of another. So I'm going to say two.
I think it's three.
Okay.
But now you say a reflection. Because I looked and I saw there were different colorings and there was one facing at a different angle. So I wrote down three.
Okay.
But I could be wrong now that you say
it. Right. Tiebreak question number two for you then. What is the company name of the truck used to steal the money?
I sort of know this because it was one of mine.
Right.
I'm moving my laptop down because I don't want to cheat in any sort of way. I've got the first bit, but I'm not sure I can remember the second bit.
Okay.
I'm going to say Everfast.
Okay. It's the Federal Armoured Express.
Oh, I thought, because they... Oh, is that the one later in the film?
The red one that they drive away from the city deposit place.
Oh, I'm talking about the one at the beginning.
Okay.
They go to the jewellery store.
Right.
Which was actually, yeah, Everfast.
Right.
So that's taken out that question. Fuck. All right then.
Have you got more than three tie breaks then?
Teddy Bar, Everfast. No.
So that's going to be your next question?
That was my next question.
And I guess I know the answer.
That was it, yeah.
Do you want to ask your question three then?
Yes, Darren. I would like to ask my question number three. What is the company name of the armoured car at the beginning?
Let me have a little think. Is it Everfast?
Yeah.
You shot yourself in the foot there, pal. Okay. Well, the rules state.
Yeah, that's it. That is it.
Tiebreak question number three for you. What is the name of the horse that wins at the Empyrean Fields?
I don't know.
Okay. Johnny's Dilemma.
Right.
I guess that's the way it's going to go.
That is the way it's going to go, yeah.
Right. Okay, so I win this week.
I guess, yes, yeah. You do.
Now, what we are going to do with the quiz, it's not an accumulative one anymore. It is just a standalone quiz for every episode. So anybody that just drops in for a certain episode, just hears that quiz.
And if you want to write us, you know, easy, medium, hard, and all that sort of stuff, questions. And also let us know, do you like this new format? Is it working for you?
Absolutely.
The way the quizzes are working.
It will streamline as we go along, we did from episode
exactly.
one.
Exactly. So we are finding our feet this week. It's kind of nice. It's like going back to the beginning.
Yeah, but you regret saying the name of the company now.
Yes, I do. Yeah, and I will play things closer to my chest. I would just say no in future.
But we know.
Would you have got that,
time.
Though, by the way?
No, right. I wouldn't have.
Okay, yeah, Everfast, yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Anyway, I guess that's last orders at the bar.
Last orders at the bar, please. Last orders at the bar.
Well, there we go. That was our look at Beverly Hills Cop 2. Yes, so it's now time for us to give a sum up and a score. And again, being odd numbered, you get to go first.
All right. Do you know, I was quite excited about watching this. It's because I've not even seen Beverly Hills Cop since we have done episode 2 of Darren and Matt's Ace's Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at nearly 4 years ago. Well, actually, we are looking at four years ago.
Blimey, yeah, it is, yeah.
So I specifically avoided watching this because I knew we'd be covering it in the podcast. I really liked it. I really did. I sat down on a Friday night. I just had a great gig. And I sat down afterwards with a nice cold tinny. And I was like, I'm going to watch this now. And I had a great time with it. Look, it's not as good as the original by any stretch of the imagination. However, I don't think it's as bad as some people make it out to be. I enjoyed myself. Yeah, the villains were paper thin and the plot was confusing for no actual reason in a film that is just over an hour and 40 minutes. I think, if I'm honest, I think Bridget Nielsen was a little bit weak or underused, or the script was not great in that. Eddie is charming as always. It's lovely to see the band back together, as you know, as we talked about earlier. So yeah, I smiled a lot. The music was great. I had a good time with this. So I think I'm going to give it a relatively generous. I can't go 7. I've got to go 6.5. And I think that's fair. I think that's a fair score out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you there. I think there's too many elements in the film competing for screen time with Eddie Murphy.
And Nigerians.
Apparently. Oh, yeah. Yes.
What the fuck is that review about? Sorry, carry on.
Funness, yeah. So I think there's too much going on, and there's too much Eddie Murphy going on. Only a little bit. And I mean, it's great having, like you said, the band back together, and they're all still working together. They're brilliant. It's great. I would like to see more of Ronnie Cox. I just think having Jürgen Prochnow as the villain, he was so bloody underused. He's hardly in it. There's hardly any screen time with him and Eddie Murphy. It's just, I would actually disagree with you about Bridget Nielsen. I think she's very, very good in this.
Okay.
I really like her. But again, underused. There should be more jeopardy between all of them. There should be more scenes with them all for a start.
Well, exactly. So maybe it's not to do with the performance. Maybe it's to do with how the part is scripted. And
yeah, absolutely.
She's basically a henchman for somebody that isn't in it.
Mm.
So yeah. Carry on. I'm jumping all over you.
No, you're absolutely right. I don't know. I mean, it's great having everyone back together, and it's great to have another Beverly Hills Cop film. And I do enjoy it. And I've been quite negative about it, but it's still head and shoulders above some of the crap we've looked at for the podcast. It's directed very well. The action sequences are brilliant. In places, it is fucking hilarious. And you know what? I love it. I do love it. Just not as much as I adore the first film. But how do you catch lightning in a bottle twice?
That's better writer. I don't think it's the direction at all. I think it's
no,
the
no,
writing.
No, but then the part of the writing is down to allegedly Eddie Murphy, isn't it? But I do like it, and I will watch it again, and it is a lot of fun, and it is a good action. It's a good 80s action, manly, balls out, testosterone movie. So I am going to give it a 7.
Oh, wow.
I know we'll go back and watch it again, and I'll enjoy it. And it's just great to have another film in the franchise.
13.5 out of 20. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Nearly two-thirds of the way there.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Get in touch. You can write to us at podcast@80sadventure.com.
Yeah.
Let us know your feelings on the film. Always good to hear from you guys. You can follow us on our socials.
And yeah, as Darren says, it's great to hear from you. Mm. So are we wrong about this? Because people have got in touch and said we are wrong about other films.
Yeah, that somebody was very passionate about...
about Predator.
About Predator. I didn't dislike Predator. Wowzers.
Yeah, just watch your back when you're walking around the streets.
Isn't it? Fucking hell. Anyway, that's our look at Beverly Hills Cop 2. And now...
Yes. Ooh, drum roll.
We get to do a little bit of performing.
We do. So whereas before it was always a convoluted, here's the tagline for next week's film. Now what we're going to do, we're not going to tell you what next the next film is. We are going to act out a bit of a scene from it.
We're going to drunkenly act out an extract from the film.
Yeah, exactly.
This could go very, very
wrong. Do we get an intro to this? A little bit of music?
I'm sure I can find something.
Okay.
If I have, then here it is.
Go ahead, Ray.
You worthless piece of slime. You ignorant, disgusting blob.
You're nothing but an unstable short-chain molecule.
You foul, obnoxious muck.
You have a weak electrochemical bond.
I have seen some disgusting crud in my time, but you take the cake.
That is the scene from the film we are covering next time.
I've got a tear in my eye.
I know, right?
That was so emotional.
Do you think we're going to get nominated for an Oscar?
Yeah, I think it's a...
At least a podcast award, right?
Yeah. I think we're going to fucking walk it, mate.
So do you know what scene that film is from?
Because that
is what we are covering next time.
Ay, ay, ay.
I like that.
I like that too.
It's better than kind of going, oh, wow.
From now on, every time I do a show, I'm going to drink a half bottle of Lambrini for a good
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you to our sponsor, Lambrini, this week for chipping in for episode 101.
Uh-huh.
I guess that's it then, I suppose. But listen, so let us know what you think of the changes. We think they've actually made things a lot more streamlined, mm-hmm. a lot more fun to actually do every week. So, yeah. I think we'll see how it goes as we delve into our sequels that are...
Yeah. Any ideas for changes as well, please let us know. Always good to hear from you.
Yes, and if we don't like them, we will ignore them completely. Yeah. So, Daz, I guess all that's left to say is, anything else?
Don't ask me, Matthew, it makes my dick itch.
Oh, that line. I knew we needed to talk about something. So until next time then, I've been Matt.
And I am Darren.
Cheers! Cheers!